Picture an ant colony under attack. Thousands of tiny warriors swarm to defend their nest, each one instantly recognizing friend from foe through chemical signatures on their bodies. Now picture a packed stadium during a World Cup match. Tens of thousands of strangers united by a shared flag, anthem, and jersey color, ready to celebrate or mourn as one. What connects these scenes? Both reveal a profound truth about social life, the power of anonymous societies, where strangers cooperate not because they know each other personally, but because they share markers of belonging. Unlike our chimpanzee cousins, who can only form societies of individuals they personally recognize, humans invented something revolutionary: the ability to feel kinship with millions we'll never meet. This capacity didn't emerge from modern nationalism or social media. It's woven into our evolutionary fabric, making us more similar to ants than to apes in how we organize our social worlds. We often assume cooperation defines societies, but that misses something fundamental. Cooperation exists everywhere in nature without creating lasting social bonds. Bacteria cooperate, plants share nutrients through root networks, and even unrelated animals sometimes hunt together. What truly defines a society is something else entirely, a shared identity that persists across generations and creates clear boundaries between members and outsiders. Think of it as an invisible fence that determines who belongs and who doesn't, who receives trust and who faces suspicion. This boundary matters more than friendships or cooperation. Even in the smallest human societies, people don't befriend everyone. They choose companions carefully, while still recognizing all members as one of us. What binds these strangers together isn't affection, but identity, a psychological sense of belonging that transcends personal relationships. This explains why societies can endure for centuries, despite internal conflicts, dysfunction, and even violence. The glue isn't harmony. It's the shared conviction that we are fundamentally different from them. Humans recognize strangers as society members through identity markers, language, dress, customs, values, and involuntary traits like skin color. Languages are our most powerful markers because they're nearly impossible to replicate perfectly without childhood learning. The biblical Shibboleth story illustrates this. 42,000 Ephraimites died from mispronouncing a word, exposing them as outsiders. These markers are so distinctive that even animals detect them. Kenyan elephants fear Maasai hunters but ignore Kamba farmers, distinguishing them by red clothing and body odor. This system gives humans unique dual capacity. We maintain deep personal relationships within intimate circles while relating to strangers through shared identity. We can think of unknown people as one of us, something chimpanzees cannot do. This mental flexibility allowed human societies to explode beyond the 150-person limit constraining other primates, growing to encompass millions. For most of human history, we lived in small nomadic bands functioning as self-contained production units. Each band created everything needed from local materials, the Aborigine treating congestion with crushed weaver ants rich in eucalyptus oil exemplifies this direct simplicity. Division of labor by sex and age formed the backbone. Men typically hunted large game, while women gathered plants and small prey, often providing most calories. Mobility limited possessions to about 25 pounds per person, forcing essential knowledge to fit inside each person's head. Food sharing created a social security system. Giving today meant eating tomorrow. Band societies lacked formal leaders. When asked if Bushmen had headmen, one man replied, "Of course we have headmen. We are all headmen. Each of us is headman over himself." Yet even these egalitarian bands distinguished themselves from neighbors, creating us versus them boundaries that would later scale to nations. Something remarkable happened in places like Victoria, Australia, where ancient hunter-gatherers near Mount Eccles created elaborate waterscapes, dams, diversions, and canals extending for kilometers without any domesticated food sources. They established permanent settlements, possibly occupied year-round, requiring stored surplus for lean times. Inuits preserved seal carcasses on ice. Western Shoshone gathered excess pinyon nuts, turning seasonal scarcity into social and culinary boom. Settlement brought new complexities, handling discord, managing logistics, coordinating larger groups. As people settled, they accepted hierarchy, wealth accumulation, and specialization that would have seemed alien to band societies. This transformation reveals human flexibility. We can thrive in dense urban environments or in isolation, unlike most species. The mental architecture for complex civilizations existed long before agriculture, waiting for the right environmental conditions to activate. Our brains construct social reality from infancy. 3-month-old babies focus on faces of their own race. 5-month-olds prefer their parents' language. Between 6 and 9 months, babies excel at categorizing other races, but lose this ability, much like language acquisition diminishes after age 5. By age 3, children view group membership as fixed and permanent. We judge others in a tenth of a second, particularly outsiders, activating the amygdala, our threat detection center. These verdicts form before conscious awareness, creating mental shortcuts that override individuals' actual qualities. We grant deeper consideration only to our own group, engaging face recognition regions and, for particularly like-minded people, activating brain areas used for self-reflection. Memory follows suit. We recall in-group members more accurately, explaining why cross-racial eyewitness testimony often leads to false imprisonments. Every society believes itself superior, a universal phenomenon. While individual boasting seems absurd, collective claims of being the most intelligent, bravest people earn patriotic applause. We intuitively organize societies hierarchically, placing our group at the top with others descending below. Children naturally place outsiders closer to animals than their own group. We rank outsiders by perceived emotional complexity, doubting their capacity for secondary emotions like hope, seeing them driven by animal-like basic emotions. This dehumanization places them outside our scope of justice, justifying unequal treatment. Disgust toward marginalized groups equates them with vermin. Arawak called ferocious rats, Jews likened to leeches, Tutsis compared to roaches. This isn't mere insult. It allows treating people as subhuman. Marginalized peoples internalize their inferiority, as revealed by a show Bushman explaining, "God created white people first, black people second, Bushmen last from pot scrapings." Yet even oppressed groups strive to maintain dignity by finding distinctive qualities to value. Understanding our tribal psychology doesn't mean accepting its darkest manifestations. Societies constantly evolve. What matters isn't specific markers, but that whatever markers exist ensures separation from outsiders. The U.S. flag increased from 13 to 50 stars without undermining national identity. Growing civilizations incorporated foreigners through mechanisms like slavery and subjugation, morally abhorrent, yet revealing our capacity to expand social boundaries. We carry ancient psychological machinery designed for small tribes into a world of billions. Our snap judgments, in-group favoritism, and tendency toward dehumanization aren't bugs, but features of our evolved psychology. Yet awareness creates possibility. When we recognize that the stranger activating our amygdala shares our essential humanity, when we question the markers that divide us, we transcend our tribal inheritance. The challenge isn't eliminating group identity, it's choosing which groups to identify with and how expansively to define us. In a globalized world facing shared challenges, our survival may depend on expanding our tribe to include all humanity.